Everyone deserves a clean, green community. We are Keep America Beautiful, the nonprofit working to end littering, improve recycling, and beautify communities. Let's do beautiful.
WSPN Washington. ESPN 630, the sports capital. Washington's new home for sports. This is the Andy Pollin Hour. On Washington's new home for sports, ESPN 630, the sports capital.
We got 2 hours today. Tony Kornheiser back tomorrow. Mike Callow is here from the Bram Weinstein Show. We'll get into two retirements from two former Washington football players in just a moment. Just want to tell you that Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post is going to be on at 11:20 to talk about the oy vey pitching situation. Joe Ross, who he said after two games, well, I guess he's finally found it there. Joe Ross not giving up a run in his first two starts. Well, that didn't last night. He gave up 10 in 4 1/3. We'll talk about that and what they're going to do moving forward with Ross struggling, Patrick Corbin with an ERA over 21, and Steven Strasburg, what do you know, back on the injured list again. Bram Weinstein will join me at 10:20 to talk about the retirement of Alex Smith yesterday. And we had news this morning that Jordan Reed is retiring after 7 years in the NFL. Both of these guys, Mike, playing last year when a lot of us were watching and saying, what the hell are they doing out there? Yeah. I guess more so Smith, but, you know, Jordan Reed, after he got ear-holed in that exhibition game against Atlanta 2 years ago, that was his seventh documented concussion.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, what is he doing? Now, he was on your show yesterday.
Yes, yeah.
For the purpose of what? Was it a special lined up guest? Or?
I guess it was to just plug his next endeavor, which he's getting into the cannabis industry, mm-hmm. but there was no brand associated with it. So yeah. I don't know if they jumped the gun on having him on shows before he announced it. But Bram had asked him, you know, if it was the end, and he said he was going to look at any opportunities. So, I mean, I don't know if that maybe Bram convinced him with the way he was talking yesterday or what.
Or he got off the show and, yeah, what am I going to do next year? Well, let me make a few phone calls. No interest in me? Okay, I'm going
right.
to retire.
Yeah.
Timing is interesting because it was reported this morning by the NFL Network first that he's going to leave. And it's, you know, it's another one of those sports stories where you go, what if? What if he hadn't had all those injuries? He's had, you know, some great moments and two spectacular seasons, 2015 and 2016. And when he was right, man, he was hard to guard.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
He was so good.
he had like this jab step that you see from great NBA players.
Yes.
And he just zoomed past you. He had great smarts because he played quarterback at Florida. Mm-hmm. And he had the speed and the size. He had everything you want except the ability to stay healthy. And that's the downfall of many players. In fact, yesterday, Bryce Love was released.
Yep.
And that's another example of a guy who seemingly did the right thing. He had over 2,000 yards in his junior year at Stanford. Had he come out in the draft, he would have been a first-round pick in an era where not many first-rounders are running backs. And he decided to come back for his senior year, got hurt in the big game, the Cal-Stanford game, and that part of the country is huge. And they won the game, but hurt his knee in that game. And Washington took a flyer on him. They took him in the fourth round, and he just really wasn't never able to make it back from the knee injury. So that's, you know, that's sort of the story of Jordan Reed, though there were some great moments, and he did have one big contract, right?
Yeah, one big deal. Yeah, he got one extension.
Yeah, so he did fine. Yeah. The Alex Smith retirement is one that sort of comes out of nowhere because the thought was he's definitely going to hook up with Jacksonville. It makes all the sense in the world. They got a new quarterback coming in Trevor Lawrence. He's great in working with young quarterbacks. He helped develop Patrick Mahomes. Urban Meyer was his coach when he played at Utah, and everything seemingly was said. It was just a matter of, you know, what was going to happen in the draft, and then, you know, after it was over, and, you know, they would decide what they were going to do and how much money he was going to get and so forth and so on. Well, didn't happen, and he put out his own statement yesterday, which I'll get to here in a second, and the statement indicates that he decided that he didn't want to play. But there's one small paragraph in Nikki Jabala's story in the Post today. In a recent interview on the Michael Irvin podcast, Urban Meyer confirmed that he wanted to sign Smith, but said, there's some medical people in our organization that were very concerned.
Yeah.
And you remember at the end of the season when there was a question whether he's going to play in the playoff game against Tampa, and he had some type of a what was it, a bone bruise?
Yeah.
And the bone bruise, they said, was just something that happened during the season. And he seemed to indicate that it was deeper than that. It was maybe something to do with the mangled leg that he had the year, a couple of years before. So, you know, while it's noble to say I'm leaving on my own terms, it may not have been completely on his own terms.
Yeah, and you got to think, Andy, there were factors there too, right? Yeah. If he had a bunch of teams knocking on his door, he's thinking, oh, yeah, I still got it. I'm going to sign someone. If the Jaguars are the only one knocking on your door and they're showing reservations about it, and then you go on vacation with your family, you probably do a little reflecting time and you think it's time to hang it up.
Look, I mean, he can now spend the rest of his life saying, I did it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because had he walked away after that horrible broken leg, and nobody would have blamed him if he did it after 2018, he would have spent the rest of his life thinking, what if I could have? What if I would have really tried? And in the interviews that he did, and we're going to play some of this in the next hour from Jeremy Schapp, he said that he was really, you know, just looking to keep his leg and get back to normal life with his family. And everything changed when one of the rehab people put a football in his hand. Mm-hmm. And the old feeling was back. And then he said he could go all the way. But he did a good job of announcing it on his own terms. Things are different now. He used to hold a news conference and you know, everybody would show up and there'd be a, you know, bunch of pictures and things like that. No, you do your own video now. And this is what he put out on Instagram late yesterday morning.
I hadn't been snowboarding since college. It had been 17 years.
Wrong one.
It's okay.
Wrong button. Here we go.
There we go.
2 years ago, I was stuck in a wheelchair, staring down at my mangled leg, wondering if I'd ever be able to go on a walk with my wife again or play games with my kids in the yard. Putting my helmet back on was the farthest thing from my mind. I just kept asking myself, all this for a stupid game? But then someone did something that changed my recovery completely. He put a football back in my hands. I don't know what it was, but all of a sudden I felt stronger, more driven, and what once seemed impossible began to come into focus. And the truth is, over the course of my life, that's what this game has done for me. I was a skinny, no-name recruit who wasn't even supposed to play in college, let alone go to New York as a Heisman finalist, or be the first one to have his name called on draft night. And then, on a routine play, I almost lost everything. But football wouldn't let me give up. Because no, this isn't just a game. It's not just what happens between those white lines on a Sunday afternoon. It's about the challenges and the commitment they require. It's about how hard and how far you can push yourself. It's about the bond between those 53 guys in the locker room and everybody else in the organization. It's about fully committing yourself to something bigger. And most of all, it's about you. So to everyone out there, whether you're a part of Niner Nation, the Chiefs Kingdom, or the Burgundy and Gold, I thank you. To all the men I had the privilege of standing with and playing alongside, thank you. I want to say thank you for believing in me, and thank you for helping me believe in myself and in the impossible. Because even though I've got plenty of snaps left in me, after 16 years of giving this game everything I've got, I can't wait to see what else is possible. But first, I'm going to take a little time to enjoy a few of those walks with my wife. And my kids have no idea what's coming for them in the backyard.
Well, I don't think he's going to get into broadcasting. If he does, he's still got some work to do. His press conferences are pretty dull, and he's not a great public speaker. But if he wants to coach, Andy Reid said, I got first dibs on him. And I think, given how important the quarterback position is in the NFL right now, he could become a head coach if he really wants to do it. Now, he made a ton of money playing football. Yeah. He made like $180 million over his career. So nobody has to hold a benefit for him. And he doesn't have to coach if he doesn't want to. But I think that's probably the next step for him. I think he'd be invaluable, certainly as a quarterback coach initially.
Well, I mean, look at the track record already.
Yeah.
He was the backup to Kaepernick when he came in the league. Yep. He was the back, or he was the starter, and then
lost
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And then you look at it here. He probably tried his best with Haskins, and it didn't work out. But you know, Heinicke mentioned him even too after that Tampa game that Alex helped him out in the room. So
I have an interesting model here for what could conceivably happen to Alex Smith. Steve DeBerg was quarterback in the NFL for a long time. He started out in the same way that Alex Smith worked with Patrick Mahomes. He did that with Joe Montana. And then when Montana became a star in San Francisco, he moved on to Denver, and he did the same thing with John Elway. And then he had some years as a starter himself. He played very well in Kansas City, got them, I think, to the AFC Championship game. He was a very good quarterback for a long time. Mm-hmm. He retired after the 1993 season. He spent 2 years as a quarterback's coach with the Giants under Dan Reeves, who was the head coach there, 1995 and 1996. Then Reeves takes over as head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and they have Chris Chandler as their starting quarterback. He was solid. He was a good quarterback, you know, not a great quarterback, not a Hall of Famer, but good enough to get them to the Super Bowl. His backup that year was Steve DeBerg, who hadn't played in 4 years, came back at the age of 44, actually had to start a game when Chandler was hurt, played in 8 games, was a big part of that team that went to the Super Bowl. I could see Alex Smith signing on with some team, especially the way quarterbacks come and go these days, and the value that's placed on an experienced one, that in the same way that when Alex Smith went down in 2018, how they had to call the roll here to eventually get to Josh Johnson, who had not been in the league, I think, in a couple of years himself. So I could see that happening, that he goes to some team as a quarterback's coach, and there's a need for him to suit up again, and he can do it. That's what I could see happening.
He's essentially the emergency catcher is what goes on there. Once your first two guys probably go down, they look to him and say, can you go for one more guy? I can see that. Today's NFL, absolutely.
Right, and he doesn't turn 37 for another few months, and Brady at 43. So, you know, it could be 2-3 years from now, and it wouldn't be a shock that if he comes back and is needed and steps in and plays, because otherwise you're relegated to picking up guys off the street who you hope know your system. Now, it worked out okay with Taylor Heinicke this year.
Right.
But those are the guys that you go and shop for, whereas if you have a guy who knows your system, who's helping to coach your system, and can still play, why not? You put him back on the field. Makes some sense.
I think that's probably the only way he gets back on the field, right? Because nobody seems to trust the leg, especially if the Jags were interested and they go, we're good, you know, right? Like if they're, even they're kind of going, nah, we're good. I think that's the only way he does get back on the field.
Yeah, if you're desperate enough. In April, the leg looks shaky. In November, when you're trying to get your team there, maybe it'll hold
up. It should
be okay. All right, Wizards. It's hard to figure them out. They have played just awful at times, and they've had these 2 5-game win streaks. And the way the NBA is set up now for the playoffs, they're right there with this win last night over the Thunder. And they've got a very, very interesting matchup tomorrow night when Steph Curry and the Warriors come to town. Now, Curry has been on fire lately.
Yep.
He has caught Bradley Beal for the scoring lead, though Beal is continuing to play well. Beal had 30 points last night. But listen to these numbers that Curry has put together. Now, he had 49 points last night, 20 of them in the fourth quarter in a win at Philadelphia. And most of those points came against his brother, Seth. Now, if you make a phone call home to mom last night, and mom lives on the East Coast. It was an East Coast game.
Sure.
So if you call her in Charlotte, how's it going? What does mom say? Because on one hand, son number one was spectacular. Son number two was the victim.
Well, it was kind of like, come on, can't you ease up on him?
Yeah.
You know, we already know that he's second fiddle to you. Like, did you have to do that tonight? That's what that one turns into.
You know, when I go and to the grocery store and people see me walking down the frozen food aisle, they're going to say, well, gee, you know, what's with your sons? You know, give them a break. He had 20 points in the fourth quarter. They won by 11. But these are the numbers that he has been putting together since April started. In 11 games, he's averaging 40 points on 54% shooting, 49.7 from three. He's hitting almost half of his three-point shots. He has 21 career games with at least 10 three-pointers, including six this season and four in the last five games. He's obviously number one all-time with that. Number two career is his teammate, Klay Thompson, who has five. He's got 21.
Wow.
Second place all-time, five.
Insane.
He has made 72 three-pointers in his last 10 games. That's the most ever during a 10-game stretch. And with 47 and 49 in the last two games, first player 33 or older to score 45-plus in back-to-back games since Michael Jordan did it as a Wizard in 2001. That's Michael Jordan, who essentially ran the team.
Right.
And was, you know, at times had enough to prove that he could still do it, and that's seemingly what it was all about. But these numbers that he's had in recent games are incredible. So if they can make it six in a row against Golden State, you wonder, not that they're going to make any noise in the playoffs, but, you know, a team that was left on the side of the road. And also, you know, you wonder about the long-term future now of Bradley Beal in Washington. Do the chances of him staying increase if they get in the playoffs and they look reasonably good? Or do they say, well, we've only got one more year of control over him. Let's see if we can deal him now. I don't know.
I think the hope here would be, because Andy, you and I know how this works. If you're not totally sucking, you better be competing to get, you know, to get one of those players. And if this is the case, you know, if they get the play-in game, get into the playoffs,
right,
they're not lasting very long. And all of a sudden, getting into the playoffs gets you out of the lottery now. So,
right,
if that doesn't happen and you're fighting for the long term, you know, the long term gains there, that's not going to work. But I will say this: all of a sudden, if Beal and Westbrook are clicking like they've been, and they're doing that in the playoffs, there's at least hope to next year. Okay, you guys kind of know what to do now. Let's do it for a whole entire season. Let's run it back, and then hopefully that appeases Beal and that they're good enough.
Westbrook himself is a story. He had another triple-double last night. Yeah. He scored only 13 points, but he is only nine away from Oscar Robertson's NBA record. Oscar Robertson, to me, is in the conversation among the greatest who ever played. Maybe not the greatest, but he's a top 10 player for sure. And Westbrook putting up these numbers night after night is unbelievable. And Curry, as you know, Mike, I'm a guy who often rides the "there was life before SportsCenter" train.
Sure.
And tell people that there were great shooters in the league. There's never been anybody like this.
Yep.
Never.
Yep.
Never. I mean, I have seen some great shooters over the years, and I think Phil Chenier, had there been a three-point shot, would have been an even bigger score than he was. Phil once scored 53 in a game without the three-point shot. But Curry is in another world, and I think there's several reasons for it. One is, father was a great three-point shooter. His
absolutely.
Father was a pioneer. When Del Curry came along, there weren't many guys who were shooting threes, and he shot threes well. And he grew up in privilege. He wasn't playing a lot of, you know, playground games where the idea is to get to the rim, and if you're not bleeding, there's no foul.
Right.
He was able in his own backyard to hone his three-point shooting skills, and he was small. Like, you know, Davidson was one of the few schools that was actually interested in him. Seth Greenberg is on ESPN now because they wouldn't offer him a scholarship at Virginia Tech. And so he was able to develop this skill when it was now a value in the NBA. When I was growing up and learning to play basketball, the idea was to get it to the guy who had the best percentage shot.
Right.
Now Curry's not only shooting threes, he's shooting threes from half court.
Yeah, and pulling up on you real quick to
do
them too. Not like he's taking his time.
Exactly, and making them. So it's a whole other game that he's playing. It's a lot different than anybody else. Bram Weinstein will join me next. We'll talk about both the retirement of Jordan Reed and the retirement of Alex Smith as Bram got to call his last play here on ESPN 630. We'll talk to him next on the Andy Pollin Hour. Don't go away. And for Tony Kornheiser today as well, from 11 to 12, Bram Weinstein, the voice of the Washington football team, is on. I lined him up to talk about the retirement of Alex Smith, but we had sort of a WTF moment this morning because Bram talked to Jordan Reed yesterday and asked him directly whether or not he was going to retire. And like he evaded safeties and corners for many years, he kind of danced around that. And then we find out this morning, exclusively reported by the NFL Network, that Jordan Reed is retiring. Frustrating, no?
Yeah, well, listen, you and I have been around a long time. This is how this works.
Yeah.
Their guys get the news, which led to a, listen, their guys asked me would I have him on and talk to him, and I said, of course.
Yeah.
And then I wrote back to him this morning, and I said, we could have waited to today to do this interview if you were going to drop this bomb the next morning. You know, like, so, I don't know. Whatever. I'm used to it. It's fine. We've got to give Ian the news. Fine. Go ahead. Give Ian the news.
Yeah, I had something like this, Norv Turner's first season. I used to record early on Monday mornings an interview with Turner after games that we would run as part of the Imus show. And this was a game where Heath Shuler, when he finally got the starting job, they had John Freeze at the beginning, and they wanted to force feed Shuler in there, and he threw five interceptions against the Cardinals, and Norv was, he kind of indicated he was going to make a change after the game. And I didn't even think to ask about Gus Frerotte, because Frerotte was a seventh rounder, and, you know, it's either going to be Freeze or Shuler. And what do you know, Frerotte is announced as a starter later in the day and wins NFC Offensive Player of the Week the following week when they won at Indianapolis. So, you know, stuff like that.
Well,
happens.
Listen, as a beat reporter for a long time, one of the big pressures is the news part of it. And it is one of the great reliefs of doing what I do now, that I can get out of that business. And if you really want to pull the curtain up on it, I mean, it's a horse trading game that I never really liked being a part of. So I'm not offended, I guess. I'm not offended that he said it this morning, even though yesterday he kind of not only danced around it, basically said, I am looking at other teams, and, you know, an hour later says he's retiring. So whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, he's one of those what ifs in all, not just Washington history, but all sports. Those 2 years he had in 2015 and 16, those were as good as any tight end years that have ever been played here.
Yeah, they were. And you know, yesterday I think really the best part of the interview I had with him was for people who were watching closely, in 2019, he was having an incredible camp. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked like he was back. Really looked like he was back. He had had a bad toe injury in 2018. And that, along with the concussions, were really the bigger problem for him getting back on the field. Well, by 2019, he was back, like looking like his old self, and unfortunately got ear-holed in the third preseason game against Atlanta, and it really nearly sent him into retirement. And really, honestly, the best part of the interview yesterday was him kind of recounting that and what happened and all the things that ended up occurring and how close he was to not even trying to give it a go at the 49ers last year. And, you know, fortunately for him, And listen, I hope he's fine long term going forward, because that guy took a lot of what we know are public concussions. So a lot of guys that play through a lot of them, and we're not sure of the severity. We know what his were. So hopefully, you know, hopefully he'll be fine as life kind of progresses here. And I think we all, like, I feel a sense of relief. Like, he's one of those guys where I go, you don't need to be out there any longer. Mm-hmm. You've had enough damage done. You know, I think it's time. Hopefully you made enough money. Hopefully it's socked away. And hopefully, and honestly, I think we all can look back and go, he is a great what if, because if he had stayed healthy, I'm not sure what numbers he would have put up here. They would have been very high level, high end tight end numbers had he stayed healthy here.
Well, here are the numbers from 2015 when he played 15 games: 87 catches, 952 yards, 11 touchdowns.
That's Kelsey numbers. That's Gronk Kelsey numbers is what that is. Yep. And had he done that 4, 5, 6 years in a row, we'd be talking about a Hall of Fame type career that he had here.
You mentioned the hit in the Atlanta game. It was Keanu Neal who got fined $28,000 for that, and that was the end of Reed in Washington. They kept him on the active roster for a long time before they finally threw in the towel and, as you say, played in San Francisco. But he told you yesterday that he really wasn't going to be on the field for that play where he got hurt?
That's right. He said that he was only going to play one series and talked Jay Gruden into letting him go back out for the next series. And obviously, like, you know, can't tell what's going to come there, but he wasn't supposed to be out there, that was not the plan. And I guess something went wrong on some route and he wanted another rep. And, you know, remember, he hadn't played a ton, you know, from the last year, and he asked to go back out there. And unfortunately, that hit happened and ruined his season and really effectively ended his career. I mean, I know he played last year, but it was on a minimum deal. And it was, you know, as a second, third option. He played a little bit more because George Kittle got hurt. I mean, he was a depth backup for them. And I think he knew the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, no question. We're talking to Brad Weinstein, voice of the Washington football team. You also hear him every day here from 3 to 6 on ESPN 630. Lined him up to talk about Alex Smith, who retired yesterday, and I thought it was pretty much a done deal that he was going to go to Jacksonville. They were just waiting till after the draft to see where all their money was going to line up and so forth. And he said that he had visited there and there was interest to sign him, and he decided he didn't want to do that. But as was noted in the post today, he was on Michael Irvin's podcast, or Urban Meyer was on Michael Irvin's podcast, and said there were some people in our organization that were very concerned about Smith and the medical, so they... Yeah, that's why they hadn't signed him. Do you think it was more that he actually wanted to retire, or that Jacksonville was the only team really interested and they were too nervous about him?
I mean, I don't know, but I would have to say that when this all was over at the end of this season, of the people I talked to, and this is obvious in what he went through, came through, another team, sight unseen, not doing physicals on him, knowing what he went through, even if they are encouraged by what he was able to do last year or motivated by what he was able to do, I can't imagine that there would not be a thorough physical examination of him. And secondarily, just think about for a moment, I mean, that leg didn't last 6 games, let alone 17.
Right.
And there were injuries in it, and granted, nothing that was all that terrible or that big of a deal, but it just kind of goes to show you the stability of that leg. And I never thought for a second there would be a tremendous amount of interest in him, certainly not as a starter, and maybe not even as a backup. And I mean, look at Chicago has as dicey a quarterback situation as this team does. And they didn't even, and Matt Nagy coached him in mm-hmm. Kansas City, and he didn't get an opportunity to talk to them. So I think it just tells you, the market tells you what it is. And I think with Urban Meyer, because of the relationship, because he's mentored other quarterbacks, because he'd be a good person to be in the room, because he'd be a leader, because he'd help, you know, Trevor Lawrence become a professional quarterback, I think it made a lot of sense. In the end, though, he might have to play. And if you're going to take up a roster spot, I think you have to seriously, seriously think about that. And I thought he was going to retire after the season. Clearly, he did not. He wanted to wait out to see what the market would play out. That's his right to do so. And the market told him, you may or may not get a shot to be a backup. And maybe in Jacksonville, maybe Urban Meyer had to sell the ownership and the front office on, he'll be the third string, and it's a break glass in case of emergency, not unlike what happened here. But still, in the end, they have to go, yeah, but he might play.
Yeah.
And they were going to be concerned about that, and I think rightfully so.
I think there's a scenario where he catches on as a quarterback's coach someplace.
And, no doubt.
And the possibility that he could still come back and play. I looked up the numbers on Steve DeBerg, who you remember sat out for 4 years, was a quarterback's coach during that period with the Giants. And then when Dan Reeves took over in Atlanta, he made him a backup on a team that went to the Super Bowl. And he played some significant snaps, even starting a game, to get him there. So I could see that happening with Alex Smith, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think in a situation where it's unlikely that he's going to end up playing, but he's going to be the right person to be in the room for everybody, I could see that scenario playing itself out. And clearly he's confident enough that he feels like he could go out there. And like even Ron Rivera by the end of the season at least was able to admit, hey, I had to cover my eyes too, you know, putting him out there, and what kind of reflection that has on me if I put him out there and he happens to get hurt again. I mean, it's a very dangerous situation. And, you know, like of all the things that happened after it was over, this outcome is not surprising to me, that like there was very limited interest, not because they don't appreciate what he's done, but that you just cannot feel secure about his health moving forward and his age. You know, this isn't Teddy Bridgewater. He's not 30 years old. Right. Like, it's not like that. I mean, he's at an extended age. He's had this serious thing. He already had a complication with it in playing a small amount of games when he was forced into playing the team last year. I can understand where everybody is very, very skittish about it. That said, he has proven over and over that, one, he's a very good mentor. He's a very good teammate. He's a motivational person. He's an inspirational person, and he's a team guy. And I think with all of that, I think there is definitely a future for him in the sport. And maybe as a, if you need him, he plays, but in all likelihood, he's more of a glorified quarterback coach in the room.
But with all that said, and I agree with what you're saying there, the interview, the way it came out from GQ was, oh, yeah, well, they didn't believe in me, and now they've cut me, yeah. And I'm going to show them. So that's what really led me to believe that he was going to do everything he possibly could to play, but apparently that wasn't the case.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, like, I've talked about this a few times on my show, and I found really odd what he did. And this is, okay, Jordan, here's a prime example of this. Jordan Reed came on my show yesterday out of the blue for no particular reason, okay? Came on my show yesterday. Why would he do something like that? It's likely to announce what he's doing next, and he did do that, okay? When Alex Smith ended the season, he went on 60 Minutes, and he went on Rachel Ray's show, and at that point, I expected him to announce to the world what he would be doing next, and he didn't do that, which I didn't quite understand. Why are you going on these platforms to tell a story? Why are you going on Rachel Ray's show to not say you want to be in daytime television, or you're going into motivational speaking, or whatever it is you're going to do next? And he didn't do that. So I think he did truly want to show that he can still play. The problem is he was going to have to find someone else who hasn't been around him and knows the story and goes, I don't even want to see those x-rays and do those physicals and try to clear this guy to play here. And that's the problem he ran into. And I guess the market told him what he needed to hear. And, you know, I am trying now to kind of put the GQ stuff aside because I was very close to it. And I really, in reading what he said, it did feel like he did not take himself and put himself in Ron Rivera or the organization's shoes in the slightest bit. And when they weren't practicing in person, there wasn't anybody that thought he was going to play in March or April last year, and including the coach who was not working with him every single day in person. And to put like this idea that, like, well, the team was working against me, I really don't think that was reality. You know, it's hard to defend this team sometimes, but in this case, I think they did everything right by him, honestly. And truthfully, they could have IR'd him at any point in time in the spring or the summer and said, look, you have a guaranteed contract. We know you're not going to retire. We can't cut you. That doesn't make any sense to do that, but we are going to put you on IR. And they didn't. He talked himself off of that, and they agreed to leave him on the roster. He was not owed that. And that's why, like, when I read those quotes, I felt they were a little not fair, not contextual. And in the end, this team went above and beyond embracing the story and repeating it over and over, and how amazing this was, how inspirational this was, how incredible this was. And then in the end, for him to say people weren't on my side, okay, for a day or two in the spring they weren't, like what do you mean? Like of course, by the time the fall came around, he was playing. Everybody was like Team Alex at that point,
right?
So I don't know.
And I think also they used him in some way to try to motivate Dwayne Haskins. Didn't work out. In other words, to say to him, hey, this guy's
on this guy.
He's on one leg, and he's coming up at 6 o'clock in the morning to study the playbook, and he's probably never going to see the field again. And it just didn't work. And and maybe they thought that Haskins would get another opportunity, which he did, and would have embraced it more than he did. So, you know, look, if Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback here last year, you're right. They put him on IR. There's no question about it. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, like, it just... they would have. The other part of this, too, is if his contract wasn't guaranteed last year, they would have had an injury settlement with him and released him.
Sure.
and gotten money back on their cap. But because it was guaranteed, they were stuck in a pickle with him. And he had to decide whether he was going to retire or not. Of course, he wasn't going to. He wants to collect the money. I don't blame him for that part. But then at that juncture of the watch, let me show you, I'm about to do something nobody's ever done in the history of mankind. for him to think, well, I can't believe you're not a true believer in this, I think is a little far-fetched. That said, I appreciate that he did do it. I mean, it's amazing he did do it. And that's why I think today, now that he's officially retired, I'd like to just forget about the GQ interview, put it aside, and remember what he did was amazing. It's something I will never forget. It's incredible. And hopefully it propels him to whatever the next step is in his career, because people look at him very differently, which is why I go back to when he was on these massive platforms after the season was over. I can't believe he didn't announce, I'm the Tony Robbins of athletes. Like, I can't believe he didn't do that.
Might have been the move. Speaking of opportunity, there's no doubt going to be a movie made, and I'm sure they'll use some real play-by-play calls in it. And so there should be some royalties for you in that. And
I hope so. I'm like, who's going to play me? Because I already know, like, Julie's going to get Margot Robbie. Margot Robbie. Who am I going to get? I'm going to get like Jason Schwartzman or something like that. Well, it's not going to be good.
Most of us didn't have Brad Pitt in mind, so you know, that'll be a thing. And when you buy the movie rights, you can do what you want with it. So they win the Super Bowl in the movie.
Of course they do. And he throws for 800 yards and 7 touchdowns. So that's what's going to happen.
Exactly. Let me hit you one last thing. We're running a promo that Bram has from his show where he says no way that they're moving up to get Trey Lance. But Trey Lance, the latest is he's working with John Beck as his coach. And I'm just thinking, I know he's a Kyle Shanahan guy. I know Kyle stood on the table for him in Houston and everything. But if I'm going to coach up a quarterback, would I want John Beck to do it? Would you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Apparently, John Beck has moved up the coaching circles and has become someone who a lot of people are using. And I actually think that him being connected to Beck right now is a sign that San Francisco is very seriously considering taking him at number 3.
Right.
I have not believed all along that they were going to move up to get a quarterback, despite a number of the reports that were out there, unless that quarterback that they like, Trey Lance, actually falls below 10. And then I could see where there's a reasonable move. Where they sit right now, they've said out loud so many times, they're not going to give up the farm to get a player, even if it's a quarterback. And you saw what San Francisco had to do just to get to 3, to get the third best quarterback. So what does Washington have to do to go from 19 to 4 to get the fourth best quarterback? 3 first round picks, maybe more than that. They've already said they're not going to do it. So I do not expect them to move up to do this unless for some reason Trey Lance somehow falls outside of the top 10, which nobody thinks is going to happen. And at that point, I think Washington should be watched very closely for people like Kyle Trask or Davis Mills in the second or third round. Day 2 is a likely place for them to take a quarterback. And the people I've talked to have kind of reaffirmed this. I have a very, very, very hard time seeing them do the kind of move that's been reported. Yeah. Obviously, things can change, but I really highly doubt it. And more and more and more, if you connect the dots, it looks like San Francisco is either taking Fields or Lance, and it may be Lance, and then it's all a moot point.
Yeah, I agree. And they're paying Ryan Fitzpatrick in a way that he can be the starter, but if they find somebody they really like, he's not making so much money that it's difficult to make him a backup. So I mean,
I heard your interview with Mel, too. I mean, more and more, if you go watch this Davis Mills guy, he's got, like, the arm. He just doesn't have a lot of experience, and it looks like the type of person that second or third round might be someone who could sit behind Fitzpatrick, and you never know, they might get a steal out of him.
Yeah, I would do the same thing. I mean, how many years have we watched this organization reach and just has not worked out? So I get it. Good to talk to you. Hear you this afternoon. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
That's Bram Weinstein. You hear him every day here on ESPN 630 from 3 to 6, and they'll take you right up to Orioles baseball today. They have a 6:30 game in Miami today, so our pregame will start at 6 o'clock. Coming up, 35 years ago today, Michael Jordan became the iconic Michael Jordan in the NBA. I'll explain. It's the Andy Pollin Hour. Don't go away.
The Andy Pollin Hour on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
I'll be in for Tony Kornheiser today from 11 to 12 as well. Jesse Dougherty, the Washington Post, will join me at 11:20. Nats pitching an absolute mess outside of Max Scherzer right now. And we'll talk about what's ahead and what they can do to shore things up as the season is not slipping away, but we're drifting towards 19 and 31 territory a little bit faster than some of us would like. Contrary to popular belief, Michael Jordan did not walk into the NBA and instantly become the best player in the league. It took a while. He came into a league where the stars were Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics, Magic Johnson and the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Detroit Pistons with Isaiah Thomas were coming. There were other players who were thought of as being better players. But when he came in 1984, he became the Rookie of the Year with the Chicago Bulls. He led the team in scoring, assists, rebounding, and steals. They made it to the playoffs, but lost in the first round to the Milwaukee Bucks. The following year, Jordan missed most of the season with a broken foot. And given how he had already proved himself to be a great player, the Bulls wanted to play it safe. And they said, "You're not coming back." And he had, unbeknownst to them, been playing pickup at North Carolina. And he said to them, "No, I want to come back." They said, "Well, there's like a 80% chance you could re-injure it and never be able to play again." He says, "Nah, but there's a 20% chance that I won't." And so it wouldn't happen this way now. They were certainly invested in him, but I think given how much a star player means today, they would have put him in like a prison or something to make sure that he didn't get back to play. But he got himself back on the court for the playoffs, and the Bulls were playing Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics. And in game two, it was a best of five first round series. So it was game two of the series. They lost the first game. On this day, 35 years ago, the game went to double overtime and the Bulls lost the game. But Jordan had 63 points, which is a record for playoff games that still stands. And years after the game, he may have said it in the locker room, but I don't know if anybody recorded it, but years after the game, when talking about it, this is what Larry Bird said about Michael Jordan's performance.
"We ended up winning the series, but it was an incredible, incredible playoff performance. I've never seen it before, and I had never seen it after. That wasn't Michael Jordan out there. That was God disguised as Michael Jordan."
God disguised as Michael Jordan. And as you know, he went on to great success after that. But, think about, Mike, how long it took him to win the championship. He comes in 1984. He first has to take his lumps against the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. And then they took their lumps for 2 years against the Pistons.
Right.
And then when they finally ended the Pistons' run in 1991, that's when Isaiah Thomas famously snubbed him, didn't shake hands, yep. And they led his team off exactly. the court. And then he winds up beating Magic Johnson in the finals with the Lakers. And then the magic of Jordan is born. He takes the torch and he takes over. But that's now his sixth year in the league. Right? 84 to, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 84 yeah. to 91. So it's his sixth year in the league. Nowadays, after 4 or 5 years, after being that good of a player, get me out of here. Yeah. I got to get some other players.
Or, the talking heads on ESPN and everyone else is going, "He can't get it done. He can't carry a team."
Well, there was that. There was that. He was leading the league in scoring every year, and Michael Jordan is a ball hog. Michael Jordan is a selfish player. Right. And then he referred to his teammates as his supporting cast. And there were people, "Whoa, supporting cast. Whoa, listen to that. Supporting cast."
Right.
And, Scottie Pippen was emerging as a great player, but he wasn't on Jordan's level. Yeah. And then eventually it was, "Oh, yeah, there's Jordan and his supporting cast." He was that good. But this was the day 35 years ago where people woke up and said, "He is really that good." How about this? Nike has ended its contract with Kobe Bryant and his estate. The contract expired last week, 4/13, and his widow, Vanessa Bryant, put out a statement. Kobe and Nike have made some of the most beautiful basketball shoes of all time, worn and adored by fans and athletes in all sports across the globe. It seems fitting that more NBA players wear my husband's product than any other signature shoe, but they were unhappy about the availability of the products after his retirement, before he died in the helicopter crash, and a frustration of lack of availability for kids in those sizes.
Yep.
So they are now this is a weird thing. Now you deal in this market of and I know people who even buy used shoes. It's a huge deal buying and selling these things. But you're Vanessa Bryant, and you're shopping around your dead husband's likeness. I mean, they've done this with Elvis and others, but it's a weird circumstance.
It's weird, but she's holding Nike accountable here, and she's probably one of the few people that can actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe had a pair of shoes, and what started this whole thing to snowball, Kobe had a pair of shoes that he wore on Christmas. They were called the Grinch, and they were just these bright green Kobe Bryant shoes, really popular. Everyone was very excited about the drop coming around holiday time last year in 2020, and everyone's hope was just make enough so we can get them. Mm-hmm. Because people don't really care to resell. They want to wear them. They want to support the player. There weren't a lot available. They did a second drop. Still weren't a lot available. Nike is renowned for holding their product back to create demand, but this is one of those situations where it was really like, let's not do it this time. Let's let everyone that wants them to get them. And guess what? You make a bunch. They're not worth as much either. People aren't going to resell them. It takes care of itself. It didn't happen. I think this is honestly her saying to them, I'm going to pull this away for a little bit. If you want to come back to the drawing board, let's talk. But we need to have a certain amount available so people can actually get these in their hands and actually wear them. And I actually applaud her for that. I think eventually they're going to work it out and they're going to
do it too.
But I think this is just her going, I'm going to pull the ball back here for a little bit. We can talk about this at a later time.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things with Nike. One, they dropped him once before after Eagle,
true,
Colorado.
Yeah, yeah,
he was
absolutely
dropped, yep, and he went to Adidas, I think. And then,
yep,
then he came back. Now, could he go to Adidas again? Maybe.
Doubt it.
Not to Under Armour, because they're unloading clients. I don't think they're going to spend the money. So do you go to a place like New Balance or some of the smaller brands? I don't know. But there's also was some discussion of him starting his own brand,
sure,
even after he retired.
Yep.
Now, I don't think it would be along the lines of the big baller brand or anything like
sure.
LeVar Ball.
Right.
But maybe that could happen. The Sheath logo featured on the tongue is mutually owned by both sides. So he's got to come up with a new logo if he wants to go to another sneaker brand. Or I'm saying he's unfortunately he's not around anymore. So it's family shopping it around. The whole thing is really bizarre. But you know this world a lot better than I do. So so maybe it's not to you.
It's basically they're gonna get back in bed that's a bad phrase to use here. But they're gonna end up working a deal out because they both need each other.
Yeah.
The signature shoes are the ones that he wore are Nikes. You can't remake those.
Mm-hmm.
The logo is only the logo. They'll eventually get a deal done. I think she's going to have to put some kind of parameter in there that say, however many you make normally, I need you to make four times as many.
Yeah.
Something like that. And it might be an unprecedented deal, but her whole thought process was, I'm sick of seeing people that are legitimate fans say, I need to pay $900 for a pair of shoes on eBay when they go for $180 or whatever it is.
Also in this too, and it's another tragic element of it, but the shoe business for women is very lucrative, mm-hmm, and the use of the daughter, Gigi,
sure,
who nobody really ever saw play, but it was known that she was going to be a great basketball player and wanted to go to Connecticut and be part of that legacy. I'm sure there's going to be some kind of deal with a line for her too.
Absolutely,
it's I don't know, but again, it's all about commerce, and if you can make money off of this likeness, and Priscilla Presley, once she got control in the Elvis situation, that produced a fortune. Yep. That's kind of the way it works in that world, and it just a little off-putting, but that's I understand it. All right, coming up, Tony and Mike. Talked about the Alex Smith retirement. We'll play that. Also, Jesse Dougherty of The Post is in, as we talked to him about the Nats coming up in the Tony Kornheiser Show next.